open.
Okay.
Want to call a meeting? Today's Forest Practices Board special board meeting field tour. This is November 13th, 2018. Welcome, everybody. Ben, would you like to lead off in introducing yourself, please?
Sure. Ben Sir, Director's Designee for Washington State Department of Commerce.
Lisa Janicki, Skagit County Commissioner.
Good afternoon. Dave Herrera, General Public Member.
Carmen Smith, Smith Logging, Contract Logger Rep.
Afternoon, everybody. Tom Laurie, Designee for Ecology.
Stephen Burnett, Designee for the Commissioner of Public Lands.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Paula Sweeney, and I'm a General Public Member.
Jeff Davis, Designee for the Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Tom Nelson, Public Member.
Good afternoon, Patrick Gaffer, Designee for the Department of Agriculture.
Hello, Bob Gunther, Public Member.
I knew if I started, you would appear, right?
Hey, thank you, folks.
Staff, please introduce yourself.
Joe Schramnick, Forest Practices Division Manager.
Bill Ferrister, Senior Counsel, Attorney General's Office.
Mark Engel, Assistant Division Manager for Forest Practices.
Patricia Anderson, Rules Coordinator for the Board.
Okay. Patricia, would you please give us a safety briefing?
Okay, and a little extra.
Whatever else we need to know today.
Okay, so at this time, I'd like to ask you to silence any noise-making devices that you have. And in an emergency, the lights will sound and flash, and staff will lead you out of the doors, double doors in the front, and out towards a grassy area along Jefferson Street. In the event of an earthquake, please drop to the floor, hold on to a chair, under a table, and cover your head as best as you can. Once the shaking has stopped, staff will lead you out the double doors in the front of the room, again along out the door to the left and to a grassy area along Jefferson Street. Now, along for the field tour today. So, board members, you have a green packet, has your name on it, and it's color-coded. That is the colored van that you will go in. We have three drivers, Mark Radcliffe, Colleen Granberg, and Sherry Felix, who's not here at the moment. So there's a colored dot in the window. That's where you will go. For members of the public that are coming, come see me and I can have you give you a packet. Hard hats are...
Where are the vans going to be?
The vans are in P1 parking against the concrete wall along 11th. Hard hats are required. Board members, staff, I have hard hats for you if you don't have one. Members of the public, we have a hard hat. If not, there might be an extra. I think that's it as far as the tour is concerned. Okay? Okay, thanks.
So I wanted to thank those who have helped to set up the field tour. Of course, thank you to Ken for hosting the field tour, Mark Radcliffe, Patricia Anderson, Sherry Felix, and Colleen Grant. Please give them a hand. Okay, so I'm just going to do a brief overview of what we're going to try and accomplish today. We want to provide the board, so even though we're going out to Kansas Tree Farm to look at the proposed West Side template, in order to give the board good background before we leave, we're going to try and give you some context before we go out and look at that. That context includes what an alternate plan is, what the riparian guidance is regarding alternate plans when you're trying to do something associated with aquatic resources. For example, talking about the five functions and how you're going to alternately provide those functions in an alternate plan. Look at, board has adopted in the past two small landowner templates. So we'll talk about what a small landowner template is and then identify the two that the board has already adopted. Mark will then give us an update on the West Side template proposal. And after that, we'd like to have an update also. If you recall a year ago, we asked the small landowners and staff to work, pull the two small landowner templates that were never adopted but were negotiated some time ago, pull those out and see if those were something that could be done in the short term while we're waiting on the science and so forth for the West Side template. So we want to get an update on that. And then we'll go out to the field and look at what's going on out there. Everybody's already got their lunch and has been eating, so I don't have to talk about that. For those that aren't on the board or a state employee, we highly encourage carpooling at Ken's place. I'm sure he's going to want to minimize how many cars he has to worry about parking out there. Ken, I'll let you talk about where we're going. We've already said hard hats are required. There will be no public comment taken today. And the whole purpose of this is to educate the board. So we've got some speakers lined up to talk to the board. The board members can ask questions. And then tomorrow, there'll be an opportunity for the public to comment on what we've seen. And the board will also have a summary discussion about what they saw and what the impressions were. I guess I'll stop there. Any questions from board members? Thank you. All right. Mark Ratcliffe. You're up first, right?
I think so. Good afternoon, Mark Ratcliffe, Policy Section for Stratton's Program. I want to give you a brief overview of the alternate plan process and then get into a little bit of what Section 21, how it addresses alternate plans and the templates in Section 21. WAC 22212, Chapter 12040, is where we find the policy and the planning process for alternate plans. An alternate plan is a process where an applicant can prescribe alternate management strategies for meeting specific forest practice rules. And they're available to chapters 222 through 38. Those are basically the operational chapters: timber harvest, road construction, reforestation, aerial chemical application. So those are the chapters that landowners can use alternate plans for. It's a tool to address a variety of situations. The most common is for riparian enhancements. I don't know a percentage, but probably in the 90s, that's where most alternate plans are for. For example, a landowner may have a stand of hardwoods along the stream. And it was shown over the years that conifer grew there and have the capacity to grow in there. But he might provoke, or she might provide something that says, I'd like to do some enhancements to remove the hardwoods to facilitate conifer growth. It's a very common alternate plan we see. Another one where just the getting to the site might be economically inaccessible. So the landowner might provide something that says, I have this plan to get to my area, but I do need to provide an alternate plan to do so. We have a standard for evaluation, and I'll read it to you. It's also in the little fact sheet that we provided.
but the alternate plan must demonstrate that it provides protection to public resources at least equal in overall effectiveness provided by the standard forest practice rules. So that's the evaluation we use when foresters look at alternate plans, when the IDE team looks at alternate plans. When Atlanta wants to do an alternate plan, it's a template, it's a form to use that is attached with the application, the forest practice application. They fill out the form, and in that form describe how resource protection is going to be done, and for aquatic resources, how it's going to be enhanced. DNR will convene an ID team with the appropriate expertise, and that's fish and wildlife, ecology, tribal biologist, and the landowner, to evaluate that plan. They'll go on site, look at what the landowner is proposing, and they'll base that the evaluation on the standard for approval. And then DNR approves, or we disapprove in some cases, or we condition the alternate plan based on the team's recommendations. In some cases, the alternate plan may pass muster and everybody agrees in the ID team. In some cases, it needs to be tweaked.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yeah.
So the language here says DNR may convene an interdisciplinary team to review the plan. Have you ever reviewed and approved alternate plans without an ID team? Or is it common practice that you always do?
I have not, no. The norm, the standard, or I should say, the alternate plan process, if you're not using a template, in most cases would utilize an ID.
Okay.
Yeah. And there's a reverse when you get into the templates and all that.
Yeah, I thought it was a requirement.
I don't know what it says in the rules, but yeah, I've never done one, and I can't think of an example where it wasn't.
We'll check that.
Okay. Thanks, Board Member Sidney. Chapter 12, 0403, you don't have to remember that, directs DNR to develop alternate plans that address common situations that have been repeated on the landscape in various alternate plans that we've seen over the years. And what we do is we make a template with descriptions that meet resource objectives, utilizing management prescriptions that have a relatively low impact on aquatic resources. And so what the template does, the goal of the template, is to allow a landowner to prescribe management plans with relative simple stand evaluation and layout. And then Board Manual Section 21, if you know, Board Manual sections are arranged by number and by topic to mirror the rules, technical aspect of the rules. And so 21 is the guidelines for alternate plans. The first part of the board manual provides the guidance for stream enhancements, riparian enhancements. And what a landowner needs to do is meet 5 riparian functions. So these are alternate plans that don't involve a template. Those 5 riparian functions are providing for shade, stream bank stability, sediment filtering, recruitment of down wood, and nutrient litter fall. And so the board manual walks and shows what needs to be addressed and how those elements need to be planned out for the alternate plan. And then board manual section 21 also discusses and describes the 2 templates that have been approved by the board, and these are for small landowners only, whereas a normal or the regular alternate plan can be done for small landowners and also large landowners, forest landowners. The templates are for small landowners. And they provide a quick way to assess stand eligibility and provides a step-by-step process to lay out the RMZ. The first one is, call it template 1, it's the overstock stand template for type S and F waters. And this template allows landowners to thin within the RMZ closer to the stream than the normal forest practice rules. And the goal is to release the trees that show signs of stress or where there's a high competition, so the goal to have a healthier RMZ. For example, just a quick example of how this works. So if the stand meets 300 trees per acre or more. That's the eligibility. And it's adjacent to a type S and F water. Then the template provides thinning down to 100 trees per acre within 15, 25 feet of the stream. And so that's narrow to the stream than the normal forest practice rules. And typically, this was done because 30, 40 years ago, when the buffers were very narrow, people harvested and then replanted down to the stream. And now after 30, 40 years, 300 trees per acre may start showing signs of mortality and need release. The second template is fixed width riparian management dome template for S and F waters as well. This is for Western Washington only. And the thinning strategies in the rules are often complex and generally not worth for small animals to go through. So this fixed width template provides a simplified RMZ width that's similar to what modeled desired future conditions might show. And for example, for site class 3, and depending on the stream size, there's a potential 5 zone combinations to assess, and that's the simplest rule that's excluding desired future conditions. So the template allows a landowner to thin within, on a site class 3, a 101-foot RMZ fixed width. So they don't have to go through all, and that's for, doesn't matter the stream size. It's one distance, one stream, one, it's all. And to recap, the templates allow for landowners to set up these RMZs under site-specific, repeatable situations. They're done with relatively simple stand evaluation and layout. And in most cases, the ID team needed is not needed, because that's what the good thing about a template is. The landowner fills out the template, adheres to the template, that's attached to the FPA, then the forest practice forester can approve that, and an ID team is not needed. Any questions at this point?
I want to talk a little bit about why the ID team is generally asked for.
Okay. So if it's stream enhancement, they want to do some thinning in the RMZ for like the hardwood example. Well, we use an ID team to call on other expertise, biologists, water quality experts. So therefore, DNR has a better understanding of how our partners in the timber, fish, and wildlife process sees that impact to that riparian area. So DNR may not be the expert in all cases, and so therefore we call for the ID team to address those.
Other questions from board members?
So how often are these two templates used is part A of my question, and then part B is how often do small forest landowners just go through a regular alternate plan process to try to do something site-specific that's different than the rule?
I can give you the answer from my time in the field, but I do not know what the practice is necessary today. Mark, do you have any idea?
No, I don't know how frequent they are. I mean, there's... I don't know. There have been hundreds in the last, 10 years, but I don't know the frequency as to the percent of the overall FPAs turned in by small business.
I did a lot more standard alternate plans than templates when I was in the field.
But so
numbers,
so
I don't know.
The alternate plan process was used by small forest landowners as well.
Yes.
A lot depends on their expertise or whether they've got a consulting forester working for them, trying to help them set up a harvest, that kind of stuff, and what their personal situation is. Is it fairly easy to get the stats on that from FPARS?
Yeah.
Okay.
Tammy's
Board Member Smith.
So there is the reason we're doing more alternate plans and templates because there's not enough templates available, or the templates don't fit what small landowners need?
That could be both. The templates for the fixed leak and the thinning, that's a site specific. Where it's some of the alternate plans that we've seen have a component of hardwoods, that so far we don't have a template to address that.
Which is a really good segue into
Mark, you want to talk about the, whoever was going to talk about the two templates that have been developed but have never been adopted by the board?
Because
one of those is a hardwood conversion template, correct?
That's correct. So, good afternoon. I'm Mark Engel, Assistant Division Manager with Paulson Services. There's a number of things that I'd like to cover. I can start with the a year ago this month, in November 17, in Spokane, the board did ask the staff and or actually policy to look at two templates that had been developed. They were never brought forward. Well, one was brought forward to the board. It was not approved by the board. The other we did not bring forward. However, most of the development was completed. I'll start with that one. That was the conifer restoration template, or the hardwood conversion, depending on how you want to look at it. That template had, most of the work was done, but there were some fine points that we could not find total consensus on with the stakeholders, but it is mostly done. It is something that, and I guess this is kind of diving into my presentation, but this, that template, and the one that was brought forward to the board, which currently the board has approved a template for the thinning closest to the water. It was based on, and I always get them confused, there's two DFC options. One is a thinning option, the other is leaving trees closest to the water. Those are in rule. Right now you choose one of those options. You can apply the standard rule, or you can choose one of those options for your RMZ buffer. What we attempted to do, because we currently have the fixed width option, which is based on the weighted average of all of the fixed widths that the industry has gotten over the years, that template does exist. We were looking to also provide the opportunity for a low thinning. So smalls would get the benefit of both DFC options, which is leaving trees closest to the water, which is a combination of the core and the inner zone, and then within the inner zone, the ability to also thin. That option came before the board. It was 12 board members were here on that day, and it was a tie vote 6-6, so it was not approved by the board. So we're picking up both of those. We're incorporating the review of both of those templates along with the review of the proposed west side low impact template that was brought forward to the board in 2015. So
can you, what does it mean you're taking up a review of those?
The board asked us to look at the prescriptions within both of those templates to see if we could be able to bring forward an, I'll call it a package of prescriptions that we could present to the board as a template for the board's review and approval for inclusion in board amendment section 21. A couple, we're in the agenda for my time, correct?
Right.
So there's a couple things that I'd like to point out. In your packet, green packet today, there is a fact sheet which has the information that Mark Ratcliffe just shared with you. To answer a question that was brought forward, alternate plans, and alternate plans are available to both large and small forest landowners. They're available to all landowners. If you decide to propose an alternate plan, an ID team review is required. That's part of the rule. Now, the intent for a template is that a templates are alternate plans. that there are a set of prescriptions that have been proposed and reviewed on the ground so frequently as to that there's consistent approval of prescriptions, so that it's expected that when you put them together in a template, that when you fill out the template form and attach it to an FPA, there is no absolute guarantee you have to have an IDT. They still may be called, you know, may call them, but it's not a requirement of a template, because they're so frequently used that we can then put them together as a template. And that's something to keep in mind today. Another thing is that the right pairing function, which are listed by name on the fact sheet, an alternate plan, you know, in rule, it says that you must provide protection for public resources at least equal in overall effectiveness to the protections provided in the rules. The rules do list the five right pairing functions, so alternate plans, for the most part, are all within the right pairing area, so that's the standard that we look at. Are they protecting the right pairing function as called for in the rule?
And what are those functions?
Oh, you're going to test my memory.
This is supposed to be branded on the forehead, right?
Yeah, it probably is, but I may do it in the wrong order. So large woody debris, string bank integrity,
shade.
Yeah, shade, of course. I probably should have started with shade. Oh, boy. There's a sediment capture and leaf and litter. So I believe that adds up to five.
You got it.
And it's something to keep in mind today. Now, we are going to see a site where there isn't live water. You may see something that kind of replicates live water. But when you're looking at the stand, keep in mind that these function must be provided for in any alternate plan, or for that matter, any template. So what has policy done? So in February of 15, the board received and accepted a proposal initiation presented by WFFA for an alternate plan template titled the Alternate Harvest Prescriptions for Small Forest Landowners in Western Washington. When the board accepted it has to go to policy. We do have within board manual section 22 a protocol in which we receive PIs and it's taken to policy, and then policy comes back to the board with a recommendation. The adaptive manager program administrator is the person that does the messaging both ways. So the AMP takes the proposal, they answer a series of questions, and they bring forward recommendations to policy. In the case of this template, policy accepted the recommendations from the AMPA and then brought them back forward to the board at the board's May 2015 meeting. The recommendations were a three-step strategy. First step was to determine whether the template meets the criteria outlined in the rule for an alternate plan template. And Mark gave you that. It's 222-120403. And then perform a literature synthesis to evaluate past and current literature, which has been generated since the board adopted the rules. And these are for right pairing function. And then provide a written response with consensus recommendations to the board. And now we're saying May of 2019. That wasn't the case then, but that's our goal now. The recommendations need to succinctly describe the results of the literature synthesis and the policy evaluation. Confirm the proposed template prescriptions meet the resource objectives and protect public resources. And also determines that the proposed prescriptions meet the criteria of an alternate plan template. Again, that criteria is that there are prescriptions that have been so consistently recommended that no ID team would be required, that they're pretty much accepted prescriptions. However, we could have some that are pertained to the science. That's why we have the mixture of both. Again, in November 2017, the board requested policy to also review the two alternate plan templates, which had not yet, or one of which come to the board, the other one had not. That was the riparian zone conifer restoration template and the thinning template. So policy accomplishments to date. The literature synthesis has been completed, and it's we have a report. We also put together questions, and it has been sent to ISPR for review. So we're now waiting for that process to run its course. Also on September 4th, the template work group called a vote on the question, does the template prescriptions as a whole meet the resource objectives to address common situations that are repeatedly addressed in alternate plans? The vote was not consensus. We had 4 no, 1 yes, and 2 sideways. So then the work group discussed potential actions for policy consideration and approval for next steps. That meeting was 2 days before the policy meeting. On September 6th, policy heard the report out from the work group. The Small Forest Landowner Caucus did appeal to policy to continue the discussion, which was accepted by policy. And then policy agreed to direct the template work group to develop a charter, which we completed in September, and then to go forward, despite the non-consensus on the initial policy track vote, to further review and evaluate each individual prescription within their proposed alternate harvest prescriptions for small forest landowners in Western Washington, as well as the 2 templates which the board had asked us to look at last November. With an eye towards template qualifying prescriptions, groupings or alternative pathways which might facilitate reaching consensus. So we're looking at each prescription one by one and making a determination whether they would qualify as a template prescription, and then grouping them in like, which again looks like it may be exactly as the board asked last November, the potential for a conifer restoration grouping of prescriptions as well as a conifer thinning grouping of prescriptions. I'm saying may. Then we need to complete the work group review and report to policy in November, no later than February 26th of 2019. What policy is asked that the recommendations regarding proposed template prescriptions and any alternative prescriptions which meet the approval standard for alternate plans, recommended alternative prescription strategies and groupings, if any, for moving forward with appropriate consideration for small forest landowners. This is per the riparian function as described in Board Manual Section 21. And then the work group will present to the alternate plan prescriptions to policy to articulate which individual prescriptions qualify for template development based on consensus vote, and identify those which were not considered applicable or majority views on recommendations. And then to work with to establish a timeline to assure that policy recommendations are provided to the board and decided at policy's April 4th, 2019 meeting. This is in advance of the board's May 2019 meeting. So you will get recommendations from policy. So that's the status. Any questions?
Yeah, not exactly sure how to phrase the question. I'm still wanting to understand a little bit better the transition from what are prescriptions in an alternate plan, which is very site specific, to a template, which can be used more broadly. What are you uses? You said that we'd be looking at which prescriptions qualify for being on a for becoming a template. What can you elaborate on that? What does qualify mean for being a template?
So first, templates have to be very specific. They cannot be overly broad. So it has to be site-specific conditions exist.
So you have to be able to describe the sites that the template can be used on.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then the prescriptions are those prescriptions which would describe or set the parameters of the harvest for that site-specific situation. For example, site-specific prescriptions to be applied in a situation where you have a hardwood-dominated stand, which there exists historic evidence that it supported conifer. So how do you move it from a hardwood-dominated stand now into a stand that's conifer-dominated, and what are the prescriptions, kind of how would you go about that harvest? So the landowner then would, I can give you an example. One of the things that we're looking at, and there's strong evidence that this is a good, would be a good prescription, is that you'd have a variable width of that buffer. And oftentimes you'll see from a mixed conifer hardwood into almost pure hardwood on the slope break, the break and slope, which may be a variable width. So the prescription may be that you're following that break and that you have a minimum and a maximum width in which you could harvest the hardwood. Then you'd have to have specific prescriptions on how to reforest the area in conifer.
So for example, as he said, there's an overstock stand template in existence. So in the first thing you read in that template is the eligibility criteria. So you have to have more than 300 trees per acre, which is, you know, at a certain point and trees age, that becomes an overstock condition. So that sort of gets you in the door. And then you have to follow the prescriptions that are identified in that template. Now, if there are other situations associated with that FPA or other things to be considered, that what happens then?
That go beyond the template.
Right.
The landowners always have the option of a standard alternate plan. So.
Or follow the rules.
Or follow the rules, of course. So, and again, on the overstock stand template, you know, before Forest and Fish, there were a lot of 25-foot buffers. They, of course, went much wider. Landowners cut to the RMZ at the time. They planted 300 trees per acre. The rule now holds that within the RMZ, you can go down to 150 conifer per acre if you have the right stand conditions. So the template was good in design in that it still provided for all of the repairing function, including in this case the fact that these stands were fairly young and small, so for large woody debris, there's a placement strategy. It also allows for landowners to recover the costs of planting in an area which is now an RMZ. So it allows them some money from a harvest within the RMZ one time in order to then put that stand in a condition where it can grow a very good conifer riparian forest. But as the chair has pointed out, there are criteria in all of these templates which you have to meet, and that's where the site specificity comes in.
Any other questions from board members? Board member Nelson.
You said that policy was going to come back by such and such a date and weigh in on the two outstanding templates that are out there. Is that correct?
We now are proposing to meld it all together into one review, and that's what we're doing. So the emphasis is on the proposed template, but we're also going to look at the prescriptions in these other templates. And as we group those prescriptions which would be eligible for inclusion in a template. We can bring them all together. And in fact, in many ways, it will probably enhance the template because there are a number of prescriptions that have already been agreed to that we can bring in and add, that can be added to.
Is this review all in-house? In other words, I mean, you keep talking about site specificity, and I agree with you. And the templates are actually a type of alternate plan, which has to meet or exceed the protections and the standard rules. I'm trying to figure out in my own head, how in the world do you sit in a building down here in Olympia without looking at something on the ground and determine all this stuff?
We have those options. But it's I believe it's 7 of the 9 caucuses have sitting members within the work group, and we also, as in the case of the development of any alternate plan template, we have the ability to bring field people in and discuss from a field perspective, is if not actually the opportunity to go out in the field and review stands. That option exists.
Well, I will tell you that when we did the overstock stand template, we actually went out in the woods and took a look, and that really actually helped move that forward.
I can see where it would.
And on the front end of the conifer restoration template, we went out and actually reviewed every hardwood conversion alternate plan for the first 2 years that alternate plans were offered. We went and did for Western Washington, went out and looked at 100% of them to assess what the prescriptions were, as well as what the condition of the site was, just so that we fully understood what was being proposed, how it was being harvested, and looking at the replanting. So we looked at 100% of them.
Before we get out of here, and so that people have an idea, what's the guidance in the board manual like regarding the functions?
Yeah, there's actually a number of years ago, through the Small Forest Landowner Advisory Committee, we took the 5 riparian function, and we wanted to include within the board manual section a discussion for all 5 riparian function, describing what they are, and then providing good examples of how a landowner could meet each one of those functions. We didn't print those today. We can print them and make them available to the board. It's a complete part of the board manual. It's a number of pages in length, but it does provide a very good description and then recommendations to landowners on how to achieve each individual function. But we don't have it in your packet today, other than to.
Right. I was thinking maybe you could give an example of what. Like,
I don't remember exactly how we worded. We could.
Like, for example, wasn't the bank stability function like half a crown width?
Well, that was
a rule of thumb.
Yeah, that was for the overstock template prescription, and it worked well. The rule holds that there's an equipment limitation zone, which is 30 feet, and that fits most of the time for string bank integrity. And it actually is a good approach to take. But again, what's been recommended to landowners is that they're reminded that it's a 30 feet, but there's a discussion about how the break and slope, and it's how it's good not to put equipment in on that last break before it goes down into the stream. And you know, that is also could be variable in width depending on, you know, how that bank breaks. So that is part of that discussion. I don't remember the exact wording, but it does also bring in what the rule requirement. There actually is a specific rule for bow shade as well as stream bank integrity through the equipment limitation zone.
Okay.
And so those points are brought forward in the discussion. So landowners know when it is covered in will, what the will says, and then a description of what is meant by it and how best to protect that function.
Any other questions from board members? Okay, so you've given us the update on the PI, gave us an update on the two templates. Is it time to hear from Ken about what we're going to be doing? Or?
Good afternoon. Thanks again for the opportunity. But just very briefly, Patricia talked about hard hats.
Introduce yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ken Miller, small forest landowner. We're going to go look at my site, which is just a demonstration of our template. If I'm successful, at the end of the day, you will have a visual picture in your head of some of the stuff that Mark was talking about. So that's mainly what this is, the intent is to give you a perspective visually that will help you when the templates, whatever comes before you, you'll have something to reference in your mind relative to whatever it is we're talking about when we're actually making the presentation. Hard hats, subject to, I guess, the board chair. I don't care if you wear hard hats or not. I do have some extra hard hats. We do litter pickup through the park, so I've got a sack full of them if somebody needs them. I didn't really want to wear one because I'm kind of like Bob. I didn't want to mess up my hairdo. But
we're just trying to follow state law.
So does that apply to all the guests?
It applies to everybody. If we're gonna have, if there's any overhead hazards, you gotta have hard hats. We're gonna be under trees, right?
Yeah, we're gonna be.
There we go.
We're gonna be about 10 feet off the road. You're not gonna get your feet wet. It's gonna be a very short walk. It's just a spot where we can see a lot and visualize a lot of stuff. And speaking of that, we do a lot of, in the forest practice arena, we talk a lot about desired future condition. Just occurred to me that your driveway in there will be going through the Miller-Sylvania State Park, which is a natural stand of timber that's about 120 years old. So it's getting, I think the DFC is 140, is kind of what they're shooting for. So you might be able to just kind of visualize what we're all trying to get to, at least on the upland portion. I would suggest that when you go across, there's two bridges that you go across, stop or pause at the bridge and look both ways just to see if that's kind of what we have in mind when we talk about DFC. If anybody is late, if we start the tour, because the demonstration is really going to be using the road. So if anybody shows up late, they'll still be able to get in. They'll just be able to walk in because we'll have to put cones across the road because we don't want anybody driving through the driveway or through our demonstration.
And then park near your sign.
Just get off the road. You'll see the cones. Find a place to get off the road. But Steve Barnemeyer is going to be there for those that show up a little early. Parking, we just go past the barn and get off the road. That's for safety. So if some emergencies need to have the road open for somebody to get in and out.
And you have your sign out on the road.
And there is a sign, yeah. Driving instructions, very simple. There's a map in here. I-5 South, exit 99, which is 93rd Street. You go left up over the freeway to the second four-way stop, which is Tilly Road. Turn right on Tilly Road and go about a mile and a half. The last cross street is 113th Street. You're in Miller-Sylvania State Park at that point in time. There'll be a green forest tour sign on the right-hand side at our address, which is 11801 Tilly Road. and you'll turn right, go, it's a service road, and fine print, it also says, and private residence, and I've got signs up there. It's about a mile and a quarter in, through the park, single lane road, so just follow that, and follow the traveled path, and you'll end up at, first thing you'll see is our barn and parking. I think that's all I've got. So, I think several of the questions that were asked earlier, I think we'll have a visual of some of those. For example, I've done the fixed width template, and I'll show that and talk about the benefits.
Yeah, also, in your packet, your green folder, there is a map of the site. So in addition to the what the fixed width template would hold, so in other words, from where the stream is, or should be, to the edge of that fixed width template, you'll be able to see that. Also, we're showing the 140-foot, 170, and 200-foot widths for the RMZs under the rules. So, we'll be able to compare the proposed template to the rule as well as the existing fixed width template. All of those you'll be able to see on the site.
Yeah, so just as an overview, what I'll do is I'll demonstrate the existing rules, and then we'll work our way into the template so you can see the contrast. And again, it'll be a visual. You're not going to need any notes from my viewpoint.
Okay, Patricia, is that it?
That's it, until I turn that recorder off.
Okay, so we'll, are we recessing until tomorrow, or are we?
This one's adjourned.
Yeah, okay, adjourned.